You're listening to the Law of Attraction Radio Network.
Welcome to Quantum Leap Book Club. During the next hour, beloved mind scientist Parisha and her guests from around the world will read and discuss various best-selling books with well-known authors. Every show will apply retention techniques designed to help you to absorb powerful knowledge to effectively change your life. Join us every week for a thought-provoking hour and re-listen as often as you can. You will be delighted by what you learn, and you will be excited by the results. Are you ready to take the quantum leap?
Good evening and welcome to the Quantum Leap Book Club. We are happy this evening to have some of our co-hosts with us. Unfortunately, Grandmother Parisha is traveling and teaching and won't be able to be with us this evening. So we're going to do our best to fill in and continue to speak about this book, The Robes, a book of coming changes by Penny Kelly that we've been talking about. And let me first introduce my co-host. First of all, my name is Mike Delar. I'm up here in Montreal, Canada, as you can see from the beautiful palm trees beside me. It's nice weather here right now. We have Trina Cooper from Denver. Hopefully Denver's nice and not snowing yet, Trina. Good. We have Rosemary Heyer from all the way over in Germany in the middle of the night. So that's dedication, I got to tell you, Rosemary, to be with us in the middle of the night. That's wonderful, and we appreciate it. We have Joyce Mollenhauer. Joyce is a naturopathic doctor. I mean, Joyce, like a registered nurse. I mean, you're like everything in the health field or something. I don't know, but you're our expert in that area, and I really am happy to have you with us tonight. We've got Geraldine from way down under in Australia. I'm not sure if Geraldine is on or not. I see her there, but I don't see her. So Geraldine, environmental scientist from Australia, Sydney, Australia, joining us. And we also have Marianne Love from Melbourne, Australia, where things are heating up and shaking and baking from what I understand these days, Marianne. I don't know if you can talk or if you're on the phone right now, but we're glad to have you, and especially since all the stuff that's going on with you. So we're on this book, Robes, a book of coming changes.
So in chapter two, she shares again that she is meeting again these magic little brown beings, and she's counting seven of them, and they're about 5 feet tall. And they're smaller than her. They have most of them have bald hair, and they're wearing a brown robe. That's why she calls them in the book often the brown little beings. And they have no beards, and their faces are really nice and even, and they have a shining a light around them also. And so she didn't want to be rude again. So she kind of reluctantly listens to them. She doesn't say much, and she's mumbling like, "Is this really real?" You know. And so they take that as like an invitation to start talking to her. And they say that, I like that sentence, "The life you keep trying to create has nothing to do with what you came here to do." And so they say they want to help her with some information to understand better her purpose. And she kind of shrugs and says, okay. And then after a few seconds, they tell her to relax and close her eyes so she can see better, which is kind of interesting, she thinks. And suddenly they telepathically start a kind of a movie for her, and her entire central system, all her senses, are right with this group of little strangers and experiencing everything right in front of her in a three-dimensional way. So she sees the earth, and she sees it like surrounded by a volleyball, kind of a volleyball net, and it charges and shimmers. And what is really very striking for her is that this form of telepathical information is very, very, very explicit, very strong, and she's completely immersed in it. And so the first thing they tell her, and that shocks her right away, as it does many people who never thought about that, that the earth is a living being. And that's actually also the title of this chapter. The earth is a living being. And she's quite capable of healing herself. But when she does, it could mean that she is rolling over and maybe the poles are shifting to some degree, and that would cause a lot of havoc on Earth, especially for us as humans. And they go on talking about that the Earth is actually surrounded by a net of waves, which are holding her in place, which makes sure that her rotations are steady. And not just only the electromagnetic field, which we know about the Earth has, but also many other waves from the cosmos who are making sure that she is in a steady place. And they're saying that our experiments with the electromagnetic wave energy, which I understand is often the new mobile technology we have, like 3G and 5G, and all these experiments with electricity and the electromagnetic wave energy are actually able to cause some fluctuations. And as if you look into science, and this is just my input now, we are really already noticing that the electromagnetic field is fluctuating very much and is weakening. Anyway, they so say that it could cause such a fluctuation that the Earth might start to wobble and probably might just basically tilt. And this can create a very strong destruction for humans. Well, Penny Kelly, the author, is still struggling with that idea that the Earth is a living, conscious being. And she's also now, she thinks that's totally absurd. And she's also now struggling with the idea that the Earth actually might change her position, causing a lot of destructions. So she's just really reluctantly actually to still listen to them, listen in the way, which means that she gets this telepathical input of movies where she's right immersed in it. She's trying to withdraw, but then she experiences it so vividly what might happen to the Earth, which other little beings are trying to inform her about. So it is actually kind of a wobble. It is struggling, and there's a bulking happening, like a pregnant woman looks like that. And the Earth is rolling forth and back, and then finally settles into a new position. And the ocean, actually, she describes, is splashing like water in a bathtub. And also she sees huge land masses which are rising up and folding on each other or folding in themselves, taking everything down, all the humans and all the animals, and leaving a bare, empty space like the moon. And also she says that she can see from her vantage point that the land masses have changed considerably. For example, her home state, Michigan, is now where Arizona has set. And also, she says that there was a total shift of the Earth, but only about 70 degrees, right? And everything is different now. So, for example, she gives some examples like Japan is now outside of the Arctic Circle. And then also the North Pole is actually what is the northern edge of Russia now. The northern edge of Russia is now actually the North Pole. So everything kind of moved up north. And South America again moved up south. And the tip of South America bridges actually right into the South Pole. And then she describes how the equator is running a different angle. It actually crosses the north of Australia now, and then it moves into the Caribbean and crossing the north of South America and moving eastward into West Africa and then out of East Africa into the Indian Ocean and then back to Australia. And also Alaska, for example, is now, after these changes, how they describe it, in the North Pole, in the Arctic area, and there's a lot of volcanic activity. And also the rivers have changed. That's interesting. The Nile River has completely changed its course, completely direction. A lot of rivers have completely disappeared or changed their courses. Europe has also moved northward, and the northern countries of Europe, Norway and Sweden, are now in the Arctic Circle. So that's something she has described, and you can actually see an illustration on page 14 of that tilt of the Earth. And I think from here, Trina takes it.
Yeah. Can you just imagine that you're standing there and you have these little men in brown robes and they're starting to tell you that the earth has changed, that it's done this in the past and it can do this in the future. And Penny's just standing there in silence, not having a clue what she should say or what she should think or how to respond. And especially contemplating the fact that the earth is a living being. So as she's standing there in silence, all of a sudden the little men interrupt her and they tell her, these changes are to be expected. And the activities of humans are either going to aggravate them, or she uses this word ameliorate, which means take something that's considered bad or unsatisfactory and to make it better. So humans can either help it or humans can hurt it, one or the other. And it kind of depends on what we do. So the changes, they go on to tell her, at the very least, you need to be aware of these things and that they've happened in the past and that they're going to continue to happen in the future. And at the very best, your life could be much more fluid. And you could be prepared to deal with these changes, because if you're ready and you're willing to deal with these changes, it's not going to be as difficult. So Penny at this point is thinking, well, you know, maybe this isn't going to happen in my lifetime. She says this could, is this going to happen in my lifetime? Because she's thinking now, if this doesn't happen in my lifetime and it happens in the future, I don't really need to be upset and I don't really need to worry about it. I don't really need to change things. But the little men come back and go, you better think about this a little bit, because if it does come in your lifetime and you're expecting other people to feed you and provide electricity and provide good water and provide fuel and provide knowledge and healing, then you're going to be lost. Even tiny, tiny little changes in the earth are going to require, as they put it, they're going to require you to know how to take care of yourself and provide these things for yourself. So then they go on to say, and if it comes in the life of your children, then they're lost too, because you haven't taught them how to take care of themselves. And finally, they said, if it comes in the lives of your children, your grandchildren and your great grandchildren, you're lost again. And that's because by that time, you're going to return to the earth for a whole new life and another round of lessons here on earth. And you're going to suffer your consequences in that lifetime for what you didn't do today. So the big message they're giving her, and she's not objecting, she's kind of listening to him. The big message is you need to do something now and decide how you're going to deal with these. And they told her to read a book, The Third Wave by a man called Toffler, which she says helped her expand her perspective. And they told her that this would give her more information and would help her to understand what more information they're going to give her in the future. So they told her that when she was finished with that book, The Third Wave, that they will come back and they'll talk to her some more. So they leave and she's just kind of sitting there. And by now it's getting twilight, kind of gloomy. And she's just kind of sitting there trying to take in what's going on. So that was the end of chapter 2. And now we're moving on to chapter 3, which is on page 16, and it's called Perceptual Shifts. So Penny in this chapter begins the chapter by sharing about her life and her background. And she says from birth to 18, when she actually left home, life kind of revolved around her whole family. She had a huge, extensive family. They were farmers and they took care of cattle and they planted, growing and harvesting. This was her world. She didn't live in a town. She lived in a tiny little house, 2-bedroom house, not in town. They weren't well to do. And until the age of 12, all she did was kind of hang out and play in the creek. go to school, run through the fields, explore the woods. To her, the rest of the world really didn't exist. She wasn't concerned about it at all. And they only had one radio, which was hardly ever on. And they received a TV set from some friends, but they never had that on. It didn't work well either. So she said, you know, she was just really out of touch with everything that was going on in the world. So now she's in her early 30s, and despite several years of college, she's still wrapped up in this ignorance. She still hasn't tuned into the world, what's going on in politics or economics or cultural issues around the globe. She's still in this really ignorant state. And then she started to read the book, The Third Wave. And this kind of rocked her world. She didn't think that it was going to do anything, but it actually catapulted her out of that smug indifference that she had into a huge perspective that she never expected to have. So she kind of rolls back into it a little bit and starts talking about details of her huge family, and that the maternal roots were there in the farming and ranching. And her mother was one of 14 children. Can you imagine that? One of 14. And her father was one of 9. And the aunts and uncles had huge families. So she lived in this existence of family around, family influences. And from this point on, I'm going to pass it on to the next co-host, and they can continue to share with you a little bit more about her background.
Yeah, this is Marianne from Melbourne, Australia. Like, this is such an interesting book. I love the way she writes. It kind of makes you feel like you're sitting there with her. It's really interesting the way she actually does it. She's so raw. So she obviously comes from this huge family. Like, on her grandmother's side, there were like 14 children, and all of them had lots of children. So she was one of 6, but that was small in her family. So as you can imagine, there was a lot of discussion about family. Like, if there was that many children, there would have been over 100 of them that would gather very regularly. And the grandmother still lived on the farm. So the farm was kind of this central place where the family would gather. They would plant, they would live off the farm, they would preserve food. So she was actually quite connected to the land in lots of ways. So the little 7 monks were kind of saying, you need to understand and get back to the land. But she actually does have some experience of living pretty close to the land based on that history. Even though her parents moved into a house and off the land, like a lot of the other kids in that family did. But it doesn't sound like them, like any of them really spoke about politics or what was going on in the bigger world. Like, I think they had enough to do with just talking about their family and their family, close friends and things. So, you know, around the table, the women would gather really regularly and just discuss things like, you know, who was getting married, who was gay, who was dying, who was having sex with who was having an affair. Like, who needs TV when you got a family like that and all the dramas that go on in a family and you can openly discuss them? So it makes sense that she kind of like got away from that at some point and just wanted to pursue, you know, education and just a life, you know, beyond that, but didn't actually pursue the greater world of dramas that are happening on the planet. And that book, what was it called? The Third Wave really introduced her to a broader scale of dramas that I think she could quite identify with in her family system. It was just that, you know, you replace like the family for the entire human race, and you replace the kind of the seasonal changes for the waves of economy and agriculture and industry and communication. They were really, really similar on a global scale. As to her sort of little family or massive family unit. So obviously a massive awakening for her.
Okay, so let me pick it up from there. So reading The Third Wave, she started to, as Marianne has been saying, see a parallel between her family and this greater global human family, each through their relations, their people, their money, their dreams, and their difficulties, like Marianne has been saying. You know, what her mother and her aunts discussed around the kitchen table, she started to see a direct relation to the challenges faced by the global community and the nations of the world. She realized that the history that she'd been taught in school was drab and uninteresting. It was just memorizing a bunch of dates and was certainly a biased version of the U.S. government and world events. But when she started reading Alvin Toffler's book, it opened her eyes and showed her a living version of history that had passion. And she spoke of the economic waves that so affected the society and humanity in these three waves. And she started to realize that her awareness of humanity was converging to a kind of a common reality shaped by the common people. She finally started to see the larger human family of which she was a part. And she explains that over many years, her attention began to expand beyond her family based on those traditions towards a more global perspective. The little monks started her on the road and later her own growing awareness of the ethos and pathos, as she calls it, of the earth and her populations. Now, when I read those two words, I thought we better define them. So when she talks about the growing awareness of the ethos and pathos of the earth, the ethos is the characteristic spirit of a culture or an era or a community as manifested in its beliefs and aspirations. So it's the living part of cultures and peoples. And the pathos is those qualities that evoke pity and sadness. So she talks about this kind of starting to understand the scale and size of what the human community was. But her gifts of clairvoyance and this ability to be in multiple locations at once served her pretty well while she was exploring this book, The Third Wave, because she could literally project herself into the scene she was reading about. And she saw it as a way to experience these forces and fates that had moved the human family. And she recounts how she had left home and her family about 14 years earlier to move into Detroit and to pursue her career. And she said it was a culture shock for her. As you can imagine, we've been talking about this huge family. And that left a big, huge hole in her life that initially she filled it up with just, you know, her career stuff. But after a while, and she got into this book, she realized that it was starting to now be filled. This gap was being filled with her new human family. And the book really shook up her world. She explains that until the guys, little guys showed up, and mentioned it, she'd never even considered that the earth might be alive or nor that it rolled around in space. It was just too much for her to deal with at that point. So she kind of pushed it out of her mind. But her newfound concern for this human family would occasionally cause her to kind of pull up a memory of something they'd said and reanalyze it or review some of the pictures that they'd show her of the earth rolling over. And she consoled herself by remembering that the men had said that the earth, they'd not said that the earth would shift, they only said that it was capable of shifting. So seeing the earth as a being that would shift in order to heal herself opened up a whole new door on how to see the planet. And she was wondering also why the little men referred to the earth as feminine. You know, up till meeting these men and hearing them, she'd pretty much considered that the earth was just a pile of rocks. And although she'd seen pictures like those we've all seen taken from space, they hadn't really moved her with the same intensity as the vision from the edge of the atmosphere that the little men had shown her. It was a powerful shock to her perception, and she realized how ridiculous it was to think that wetting down a bunch of rocks and sticking them together while they spun through space could be the full understanding of what Earth is. I mean, you got to just stop for a second and put yourself in this lady's shoes. You know, all this stuff is going on and she's just being bombarded, not only by her own questioning of her own state of mind, but then seeing little guys who are telling her all these dramatic things. I mean, how would you feel? I mean, anybody got any ideas? You know, what would that shake up your world, or how would that shake up your world? Trina?
Ah, off mute. Yeah, I was thinking about that too before, you know, we came on the air. It's hard enough if someone showed up like that to actually go, are they real or are they imaginary? And then they start telling you some things and you're going, okay, do I believe them or do I not? And even nowadays, we have scientists that are saying, you know, one thing's going on, something else is going on. But if it's not part of our reality, it's so hard for our mind to wrap itself around it and actually accept it and have us actually take action. So in the part that I covered, the idea that we need to begin to take care of ourselves and learn how to provide our own food and provide our own electricity and provide our own water. Sometimes you can go there and say, oh my gosh, what would happen if all of the city systems shut down or the grocery stores weren't open or we didn't have any fuel to get? And we've probably seen a little bit of that during this time period of COVID where the shelves were bare, the fuel wasn't available or whatever. But did it move people enough to actually take some action to maybe figure out how they would provide heat and warmth in their house if they live in an area where it's going to snow? You asked me if it was snowing in Denver yet, and it's not, but it is in the mountains. I can see it. So it's coming. And that made me think, well, if I didn't have power, how would I take care of myself? If I didn't have any food stored, how would I take care of myself? So these are the things he's saying. They're telling her, you need to wake up and become aware and teach your children how to do this and teach your fellow neighbors how to do this, because you're going to suffer the consequences if you don't. And still, even with all of that presented, I find myself kind of dragging my feet when it comes to it. I can wait till tomorrow, but can I? That's a big question. Can I really wait? So there's a lot to think about here. Definitely.
It's kind of like when she said, I think early on in the book, that, I know this won't happen to me somehow, you know, without even kind of giving it any conscious thought, it won't happen to me. I won't be there. You know, somehow I'll get through it. There's an inertia there that's very large that he, in order to move into action, as you say. Marianne, do you have any thoughts about this?
Yeah, I do. Like, I thought what was really interesting is she's talking about earth moving and earth tremors and things. And where, as you might be aware, we're having a whole lot of drama here in Australia and in Melbourne. Like, we've been in lockdown for a very long time, and some industries really arcing up, and they're doing mandatory vaccinations and all those sort of things. And people have started to take to the streets, and it's gotten a bit violent. And just after one of our major protests where it got really violent, yesterday we had also the largest earth tremor that we've had in 200 years of recording, not far out of Melbourne. And I felt it, the building shook and the earth shook, and you know, and everyone was, it's a massive wake up call here. And I couldn't help but feel like the earth was talking, and it was in direct response to what is actually going on here in the consciousness that's here, and the, you know, the battle in a way, the shift that's happening in the people here. So it's feeling very real in a way for me right now.
Thank you for that. Rosemary, you had a thought?
Yes, I just wanted to say one more thing regarding that preparing for the earth changes. I think what I'm also getting from what they're sharing is that we do need to take personal responsibility. And if you keep reading the book, they're coming to that back later, that is a really crucial thing in our future in development. And regarding the earth changes or what are they experiencing in Melbourne now, what I noticed when I was reading about the changes which might come, we are already in it. And the book has been, I think the book was published quite some years ago. So, I mean, they have been actually in Canada measuring that since 2019, the magnetic North Pole, not the geographic, but the magnetic North Pole, is actually moving towards Siberia in a speed of 50 kilometers, about 35 miles per year. So it is already moving. They also have noticed that the electromagnetic field, the magnetic field with electrical current of the Earth is weakening, and it's very different. I mean, there is they had a new satellite out in the space, and they were reading the magnetic field, and they noticed that, for example, in Central Africa, there is a spot where it is very, very strong, and in the Western Hemisphere, it is more weak, and it keeps weakening consistently. So we are already, you know, they're actually saying that a flip of the poles could happen much sooner than they expected. Some of them talk about in the next 2,000 years, and they say it might be even earlier. Some of them talking maybe 10,000 years, but they're all noticing there is some change already going on, and we need to prepare for it. That's what I wanted to share.
Thank you for that, Rosemary. Joyce, you had a thought?
Yes, a couple of thoughts. One is that it's intriguing to realize this book was written in 1999, and then I guess it was a second edition in 2005. And it might as well have been written yesterday with the things that the world is experiencing. So I guess when it first came off the press, it maybe was a little bit unbelievable to readers, because not too much of this was happening at that time, or what was happening was kept from most of us, that we were really being quite unaware. So I love the fact that the thought has come in very early in this book, and Penny expressed it so clearly that it is up to us individually. And I know that's been already mentioned, but I think it's a very prime piece of what we're discussing tonight.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Joyce, and I'm glad you did bring that up. Geraldine, did you have a thought?
Yeah, I did. There was a couple of things there. And one of the key ones was that idea of being prepared is around balancing. And when I say balancing, it's like if there's a fear, then if you do something about it and get prepared, you have less fear about it. You're prepared. You stay in cause rather than being affected by something. So the whole thing is to move out of being affected by things and being the cause of things. So if you're prepared, potentially you've caused an outcome. If this happens, then I'll do that. And one of the reasons, if we again look into the quantum side of that, if we're very fearful of something, we will be thinking it, and we'll be sending out emotions as well. And that congruence, or that our thoughts and our heart sending out the same message, is more likely to bring that into a reality. So whether that's individual or it's on a whole society, when we prepare and we drop the fear, there's less likelihood of putting that thought and emotion into the field, as they call it, out there, and then having it as an actuality. So there are things that happen, but our preparedness and dropping a fear and moving into cause can help balance that. It actually changes the outcome, which is what's been said early in this today's as well. The other thing is to know that we are biologically wired to stay the same. So if you look back on your life, your day, your week, and you are doing something the same, learn more about your biochemistry and see where things can be a chemical addiction to a particular behavior or thought. And then be kind to yourself to say, okay, that's the chemistry. Now, what do I do? And there's plenty of information, and definitely Marianne knows a lot about that. But so be kind on yourself. Understand there's a biological wiring to staying the same. And the third one, really quickly, is I remember once very early on asking Grandmother Parisher about the earth and earth care. And I, from a teaching we had, I said, it sounds like the story in Peter Pan of Tinkerbell, when Tinkerbell was fading away. She was becoming translucent. And anyone who's watched Peter Pan may recall that scene where Tinkerbell's starting to not die, but she's going translucent and disappearing. And the question is put to her, you know, what can bring you back? And she said, for everyone to believe. Now, believe is a relatively weak word, but we might say for everyone to focus with intent that fairies are real. And they spread that message in the children's belt and decided that fairies are real. And she was seen to bring her energy back. So what we're talking about here, potentially, one can ask themselves and think about it this way. The earth is a living being. We're living beings. Our energetic emanation of belief and appreciation of the earth, wherever, whatever you're looking at, a piece of blue sky, or I'm very lucky to have a lot of green around me, every part of that that we look at with appreciation can help that energy of the earth as well. And the poles do flip. It's easy. It's in science. 42,000 years ago was the last one. On average, it's around every 200,000 to 300,000 years. It happens. So we'll leave it at that.
Thank you. Those are really, really excellent points. And I think the thing that you underline the most is that every little bit that everybody does helps to balance the fear that's out there. And that's what's so important. So Marianne, here's my question for you as someone who counsels people and helps people. What do you do when someone sees this and starts to freak out? And they just can't deal with it. What would you say?
Good question, Mike. Well, I guess as a trauma therapist, I really go into the underlying belief systems that are causing some of the reactions, because we'll have underlying beliefs that are coming out of life experience, like safety around fear of power, loss of power, out of control. Like people will have a base schema or way of thinking from their history, and then you apply that to your current situation. So, and then it validates itself. So if you believe you're powerless, you look around at the current situation, you go, I'm powerless. Like, what can I do in this situation? I think just understanding that cycle and of how we actually project out onto our world and create our experience is a lot of the work in therapies. Becoming, like Geraldine was saying, getting in cause and getting in, you know, intention. And a lot of that's breaking through those old programs. You know, and it's really hard to imagine, how do you apply it when your governments are doing this and, you know, like, but you can, because you create your reality. So it is up to you. They don't control how you feel. It's up to you to determine that. They don't control how you think. That's up to you to determine that. And what you create then is, therefore, is up to you. So, and I like in the book how she talked, how the little men talk about passing on to the next generation, preparing your next generation. So even if the earth doesn't happen to flip in our lifetime, we're still passing on a consciousness, and that's each of our responsibility. And I tell that to my clients, it's sort of one person at a time. Imagine if we all uplifted our consciousness, what planet would we be on if everybody just took responsibility for themselves?
Well, if I was one of your clients, I think you'd have a hard time getting rid of me.
Yeah. Nice. Thanks, Trina. Mike.
Trina, you had a comment also?
I do. This is a little bit different subject. When we started chapter two, there's a really fabulous description of the little men. And last week, Grandmother Parrish made a note to say, these are not little brown men. They're little men in brown robes. And so, but I love the description, because she did count them this time. And there were seven of them, and they're not even 5 foot tall, with the long brown robes, floor length, the long sleeves, and a white or gold colored rope around the waist. Two of them are bald, and the rest of them have like silvery gray or light brown hair that circles around their head. And they have round faces and ruddy, shining complexions, like they're scrubbed and polished, and they exude inner light. And I thought, every time I hear the description of them, I think of the monks, maybe back in more of the Renaissance time, or actually maybe Friar Tuck from Robin Hood. And I keep thinking, why in the world did they come to her looking like that? Of all the things that something could appear, maybe this is something that was very comforting, or they would know she was very comforted, or, you know, what in her background this made her feel better. But anyway, I just wanted to make that point, that these are little men in brown robes, and they look kind of like little monks. So I guess you would think of them as teachers or men of wisdom or something like that. And it's interesting how things appear to you also. And they seem to have a very calming air about them. So this is not meant to be scary. This is meant to give wisdom and information where we can take action. We can do things. So I would encourage people to really think about it seriously. What can you do?
That you're so right, Trina. And it reminds me when I one time I was in Mexico and we were at Chichen Itza and we met a monk. In this case, it was a Tibetan Lama, and he became from Bhutan, and he became a very good friend. And we called him the Laughing Lama because no matter what we said to him or what he were talking about, he always had this great upbeat, simple kind of approach. And that's what I see in these guys. You know, when I read the book, that's the kind of the aura that I get from them, is that they're just very pleasant. Everything is okay. And they just see life as a bunch of stuff that's happening and not to really get worried about it, just to live it. Any other thoughts on that, or why monks?
I just had a thought on what you were saying, is that it's interesting that sometimes you need to see the worst in order to then do the changes and get out of apathy and feel really uncomfortable and then start to question and then start to see what's your position in it. And I think the monks are delivering that to her. I think for some of us, the current global situation is delivering that to a lot of people on the planet right now, like a lot of what's being described is being lived currently. And we need this wake-up call, and I take that as an invitation. And I know a lot of people get scared by it, but what if it's just an invitation that good things are coming and this is our wake-up?
Absolutely, absolutely. Rosemary?
Yeah, I was thinking about that more on a personal level. Like, we have a major election on Sunday, which is probably going to be a shift in our political governments. But what I hear in all that discussion in the election is always that the government needs to do this. Climate change, the government needs to change this. The political people need to change it. They need to do that, and they need to do that. And there's still this thing happening that everybody says they need to do this. And I think one of the frictions, like Marian shared, is that it's coming from that people are frustrated because the political people are not able to do it. It's just too complicated, and it doesn't matter. I don't want to go into any kind of right or wrong. But what I'm trying to say is that we need to get away from they need to do it. And I'm always thinking, what can I do locally? What can I do locally besides recycling my newspapers? What can I do locally, for example? And I think it's all about community building and in neighborhoods, that we start needing to talk to people and really start community building. Like, we had this big flood going on, and just a few of us got together on WhatsApp and had a little group. And from that, we started to do some things for these people who are still suffering severely from that flood. So what is it I can do, you know, in the neighborhood? And I think a lot is community building. It's really to start talking to neighbors and to be in touch with people locally and to be able to organize and meet and talk and share on local Facebook groups and stuff like that. So I'm saying we need to move away from a society, and also maybe even speak to that in letters to the newspapers and political people from the government. What is the government doing? Because that's not going to happen. And the changes have to be tackled by, as we said many times, by our own responsibility.
Well, I think certainly the theme that we've been talking about here is that everyone has to be responsible for themselves. And I think that's coming through pretty much in what everybody's saying. It's time to step up and realize that and not expect it to just be okay or somebody else to take care of you. So if anything else, that's probably the theme we can kind of conclude on this evening. So it is that time to conclude our studies. And we thank you for sharing your time and energy with us. You matter and you count, and you always make a difference. We look forward to you being with us next week as we make that leap to greater consciousness. Have a powerful week and allow your light to shine. All good things.
Thank you for listening to Quantum Leap Book Club. For more information where you can contact us, go to loaradionetwork.com/quantum-leap. Have a great week.